Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. The paradigm about marijuana is shifting radically in this country. People are discovering it's got an awful lot of benefits, and it's a good old, what would you call it, a natural healing tool when it's used properly. So we have Chris Boucher on the show tonight, and Chris is going to talk to us about the legislation that hasn't been accepted, has it, Chris? So you're going to tell us all about it anyway. Tell us what the machine is doing with it.
Yeah. I mean, currently right now they introduced it and they're getting signers on the bill. Senator Cory Booker, and you're speaking in reference to the CARES Act with Senator Gillibrand.
Okay.
And Senator Booker. I hope I pronounced their names correctly. So this is it's a new bill, and it's getting some legs on it.
Okay, so what's happening with it? Like, first of all, who are you?
My name is Chris Boucher. I opened one of the first hemp companies in the United States back in 1991.
Wow.
I actually grew hemp at an industrial at the USDA. I grew industrial hemp at the USDA Research Center in Imperial Valley, California, 1994.
Wow.
And I actually wrote some of the first industrial hemp legislation for California and for Colorado back in 1995. And, just was instrumental in importing and selling hemp seeds, hemp oil, hemp clothing, hemp textiles here in the United States for the last 25 years.
Well, what inspired you? Were you raised in kind of a growing, what were you raised in? Is this new to you, or is this part of your agricultural training, or what?
I think my mom and my dad raised us. We're from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and we believed in, find out what's going on in the world and learn something. But I actually had my awakening probably first in Santa Cruz in the late 80s. I was involved with Surf Rider Foundation, and I was involved in an action to prevent the oil wells from being put off of Santa Cruz back in, I think it was 87, 88. And so I actually saw some activism there and learned how to organize with Surf Rider. And I actually got into the textile industry at the same time. We were making clothing and all from organic hemp and et cetera, et cetera. And then by 1990, I went into a store in Van Nuys, California, and there was a retail store, and I was going to sell them some cotton backpacks and bags, and a gentleman asked me to sign a hemp petition. I asked him what hemp was. 8 hours later, I left his store, and it changed my life. From that moment on, I said, I'm going to make clothing and food out of hemp, and everyone thought I was crazy, but sure enough, I was able to find hemp in other countries and turned it into a really successful hemp company for about 12 years.
Wow. So how's that? Oh, well, let's do two things. Tell me how that's going in terms of the market right now, and then we'll get into the legislation and what some of the ramifications of that are.
Well, currently, right now, according to the Hemp Industries Association, which I actually co-founded in 1992.
Wow.
And the Hemp Industries Association is a coalition of over 200 companies are involved in the hemp space, textiles, ropes, food, non-medical. And so the SPIN study, which is a really solid study on industry, came out 2 weeks ago and analyzed the current American hemp market is about $630 million.
Wow.
So Americans have purchased over $630 million of, hemp protein powder to hemp T-shirts to, hemp seed oil. So it's a huge growing industry. And unfortunately, all that was grown in other countries.
Oh, wow. So, really? Well, why is that? I mean, doesn't America kind of does have its own hemp crop, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, we right now in Kentucky and Colorado, they have special legislation that lets universities and the Department of Agriculture grow hemp for research purposes only. And that was enacted in the Farm Bill of 2014, which allowed any state that had industrial hemp laws that they could actually have a federal law that determined basically any cannabis plant that was 0.3% THC and below, you could actually classify as industrial hemp, which I like to call agricultural hemp. I'm not a fan of the word industrial.
Yeah. Tell me, what's the difference between marijuana and hemp?
The THC level, according to the federal government, industrial hemp, agricultural hemp is 0.3% THC.
Okay.
And I guess everything above that, according to the federal government, is marijuana. But it's the same plant.
It's all cannabis, right?
It's all cannabis sativa. I kind of break it down real simple. I compare it to just say like non-alcoholic beer, which would be your hemp, and your alcoholic beer, which would be your marijuana. One gets you high, one doesn't, you know. There's trace amounts of small amounts of THC in industrial hemp, which same with your non-alcoholic beer. It still has a little teeny bit of alcohol in it, but you're not going to get drunk. But it, you know, comparing it down to that basic level, if that makes any sense.
Oh, that's really interesting, eh? When you're talking about the level of THC, let's move into what the legislation is that people are trying to put forward. And again, as soon as I ask you that, I go, well, there's two levels, right? There's the medical use of it, right? And the
Yes.
recreational use and the stabilizing of what the THC content is, right?
Yeah, and currently, right now, the federal government, according to the Controlled Substance Act, it's all considered Schedule One, whether it's you know, growing hemp for rope or growing it for medicine or growing for recreational purposes. It's all lumped into Schedule One. And what does Schedule One mean? It basically means it's in the same category as LSD, ecstasy, heroin. It has no use for humans, no medical value.
Wow.
And it's kind of crazy when you look at Schedule Two that has medicinal value. You find cocaine and methamphetamine in Schedule Two, which
Oh, you're
actually,
kidding. Who makes
no.
decisions up?
Well, that's what that new CARES Act we talked about is basically going to remove cannabis, medical marijuana from Schedule One and put it in Schedule Two, which will be recognized as having medical use for humans.
Well, when did the law go in limiting the marijuana? Was that a prohibition time?
Well, the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 basically taxed, you know.
1937, okay.
Yeah, and it was probably one of the most racist you know, immigrant and just a very horrible law that went into effect. And like I said, it was definitely racism was involved. If you see Harry Aslinger, he was the head of narcotics for over 50 years here in the United States, and he teamed up with a guy named Harry Aslinger and William Randolph Hearst. Get that straight. So William Randolph Hearst, probably a lot of people know who he was. He owned over 100 different newspapers across America, and
Right.
he could basically, you know, put front page headlines of whatever he wanted to. And for years, there was front page headlines of, you know, black people smoking marijuana and murdering white people. And you
Oh
know, if
my
you smoke
gosh.
marijuana, it made you want to murder people. And then they both hated jazz music, and they saw jazz music and they called it Satan's music.
Oh my
Almost
gosh.
like rap in the early 90s came out, and they saw it. It was going to change society the way it was, because back in the 20s and 30s, white women weren't allowed to dance in front of black musicians. That kind of,
Oh, you're
that,
kidding. Oh, I didn't know that.
oh, yeah, that crossed the Jim Crow laws, which, you know, you weren't allowed to walk in their, they weren't allowed to walk in your shadow. Black man couldn't look you in the eye. And these guys were part of the KKK, Harry Aslinger. And some of the stuff that he said, you can look his name up on the internet,
Aslinger.
and I can't repeat it because it's just so horrific, the racial connotations. So basically what they did, they scared America for about 12 years, 15 years, and into outlawing marijuana and not knowing that they were outlawing hemp at the same time. And it's been that way for the last, 70 years. So times are changing now.
But prior to that, was hemp more in use, and did it grow in this country more easily?
It grew probably in almost every state. We do know it was probably one of the most prescribed medicines for about 100 years in the United States.
Really?
If we go back to the founding of this country, I always tell people hemp's more American than apple pie. I mean, you got to consider, Betsy Ross's flag, Old Glory, was made out of hemp. And if you're a patriot, we used to salute a hemp cannabis flag made in America. Now we salute a nylon DuPont flag made in China. So
isn't that sad?
A disconnect. Yeah.
Well, so was cotton not growing then? I mean, you see where I'm trying to get to the etymology?
Oh, cotton was an exclusive, very expensive commodity. I mean, a cotton shirt in the 1700s was almost, I've heard, almost $100.
Wow, really? So more like silk or something then?
Only rich people wore cotton back in the 1700s, 1600s. It was very, exclusive and expensive, like you said, like silk. But hemp was so important because I break it down this way. Without hemp, we wouldn't have been able to discover America, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. So how did Columbus cross the ocean? How did the Mayflower cross the ocean? These were all propelled by hemp sails, hemp ropes, and hemp oakum. A lot of people don't know what hemp oakum is. Basically, it lined the inside of the ship so it wouldn't sink. And so it basically propelled exploration of the world. I mean, trade, commerce.
But did they smoke it then? Did they smoke it as well?
They used it as a medicine. I'm sure they smoked it. It was probably more of a tincture than anything. I think, back then they didn't have nightclubs and parties like they do now. So things were a little more serious. And so it was definitely a medicine, and you could actually grow it to, make sails for your ship and also medicine. What a great crop.
Mm-hmm.
The word canvas actually means cannabis.
Oh, my gosh.
So everything that was made out of canvas, was made from marijuana cannabis. So those words are intricate in our, language. Even the word pajamas, pajima, you put your kids to bed at night and you put their pajamas on. That word in Chinese means men's marijuana pants, pajima.
Gosh. So hemp is around the world kind of thing as well, hey?
Yeah, it's been growing around the world for centuries. We've just demonized it here back in the 20s and 30s and just, the reefer madness and all this really horrible misinformation and bad science basically was propaganda to make people turn against it. And then they use the children, the kids are going to do drugs. And, we all know kids shouldn't be smoking pot, they shouldn't be smoking cigarettes, and they shouldn't be doing booze, and that's, where we need to educate our children and teach them. But it's pretty tough that they've eliminated everything I just told you out of the history books. You don't learn any of this in history anymore. So that's something that has to change also.
Well, you can learn it on the internet maybe, huh?
Yeah, well, that's what's happening.
Well, so you've got the blossoming of awareness, because I've known this for... Well, a lot of us have known this for many, many years. I knew a lot of older people with cancer who were smoking marijuana in the 60s and so on, right? So it came up. It came back up. They were smoking it for medicinal purposes is what they were doing, right?
Yeah, people were smoking it. They were eating it. They're making lotions, making creams. I mean, even in the book of the Bible in Exodus, it talks about God told Moses to make the holy anointing oil, and part of the ingredients was cannabosm, which was cannabis.
Hmm.
So for about 2,000 years, all rabbis carry around marijuana lotion or salve. It was mixed with frankincense and myrrh, but
and
definitely...
And that was to heal your skin or to heal your mind or what?
Yes, I think it was a tincture that you could, the anointing oil could go on your skin, topical, or it might have been also eaten, I'm not sure, but definitely know that cannabis, when it's, it can be... consume through the skin. You know, it's another application for it to get it enter the body through the skin, whether it's through the temples, through the wrist, even open wounds and sores, it works great for.
Wow. And you know something? This is funny. I just suddenly remembered an older woman that I knew many years ago, and she was always laughing because she and the fellow who created Batman used to smoke a lot of marijuana back in the 30s.
Oh, I'm sure a lot of creative people used it, and musicians. And I mean, that's how they coined Harry Aslinger and William Randolph Hearst. That's why they called swing jazz Satan's music, because they thought that black musicians, when they smoked marijuana, they were skipping a beat, and it was brainwashing people.
Oh,
no, that's congressional testimony. And a lot of times when I say some of this stuff, I always say, go look it up on Google.
What I love about that, Chris, is that we've got so much bamboozling going on in our brains that has very little to do with marijuana. So that they're already marketing some crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, even the word marijuana is a racist word, marijuana. It means male, female, transvestite. And so back in the day, you know, if a man smoked marijuana, especially Hispanic, they could actually turn into a woman. They could grow breasts. And, you know, this was science that was put out there. And so it really scared people. The word marijuana was actually like, how do I put it? It was more like Frankenstein. It was a really scary.
Oh, that's interesting.
Word. So I always like to use cannabis and all that, but, you know, most people don't realize, you know, where it came from. So it's interesting to get pieces of the history on it.
Well, I love the way you've kind of built up just a thumbnail on how the prejudice built up, or the fear. It's the fear of marijuana that really affects a lot of people, hey?
Yeah, it was the fear tactics. And if you read the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937, you can actually read some of the congressional testimony. And there was quite a bit of racist stuff in there. And what happened was they just called it one day. There was no, like, letters sent to anyone, really. No one really showed up. A couple people showed up that were in the industry. I believe the bird food industry showed up, and they said, you cannot outlaw this because the canaries won't sing. And that's one of the reasons why they left the marijuana law intact, to where hemp seeds were still legal as long as they were sterilized.
Oh, wow.
Also, Sherman William Paints actually showed up for the testimony, because all your paints were made from hemp seed oil. And they're like, well, where are we going to get our oil from? And, you know, of course, petroleum was coming in at the time. And our whole economy was shifting from, you know, an agricultural-based carbohydrate economy to a petroleum-based economy back there in the 30s. But what's more ironic is the same year that they outlawed marijuana, Popular Mechanics came out with a front-page story on hemp was the first billion-dollar crop in American history.
Oh, wow, really? 37. Wow.
Can you imagine if it was never made illegal? What would it be worth today if it was worth $1 billion back then? So that's quite interesting.
Do you think that's because the cotton market started to grow? Do you think that? I mean, I'm talking about the bullying in the marketplaces quite often that subdue some kind of growing thing.
You know, there was quite a bit of factors. Like I said, you were having a big conversion. All your plastics were converting over from petroleum plastics. Some of your textiles, you know, your cottons and your hemp were converting over to nylon. That's when nylon was invented. So there was a power play there. But, you know, when you read the congressional testimony, it was really racially slanted, more so than any other competitive market like petroleum or the cotton industry. So we definitely know that they just wanted this crop illegal, and they didn't want anyone to use it.
Wow, it's a real bullying thing. Well, let's jump into the legislation and then get back into this, because this is very intriguing, isn't it? It's like it's a vein that runs right through the whole society, huh?
Yes, yeah, I could agree. That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the legislation that's been put in.
Well, we have a couple pieces of legislation. We have the CARES Act, which is the one that's going to remove medical marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. You know, that way it will have medical benefits for humans. Currently, right now, as I said before, the federal government basically doesn't recognize marijuana as having any benefits for humans whatsoever. And by removing it from Schedule 1 and putting it in Schedule 2, it will open up research, universities, scientists. It will be a lot easier for them to get a research permit. Because right now, if they go to the DEA and say, we want to research this for human use, you know, they say, well, it has no medical value, so you can't research it really. So it's really hard to research on humans. And universities will get involved. And then at the same time, you're going to see Wall Street, a lot of investment companies, Wall Street bankers, even the banking system right now can't get involved with medical marijuana because it's Schedule One. So it's going to really bring of resistance and open up a huge, I think, economic windfall for everyone involved because
then
know,
they
research,
get loans, you mean, for business and for doing research, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they'll be able to fund research, and right now they can't really fund any research because of that Schedule 1. Mm-hmm. So it's really restrictive. And also you have another bill. It's the Industrial Hemp Act, which Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, they're all sponsoring. And that, again, recognizes and removes industrial hemp from Schedule 1. Because it's all wrapped up right now. It doesn't matter, like I said, if it's industrial hemp, medical marijuana.
It's all it's together.
Yeah, so this could break down a lot of barriers. And like I said, it just opens up investment, banking, you know, can create jobs. You can build infrastructure. You know, it takes money to make this industry happen. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see that really open up.
Well, it's already happening in states, isn't it?
Yeah, we have 23 states that have medical marijuana bills. They're all different. Some of them are really restrictive. You know, some of them are pretty loose. And you've got about 18 states that have industrial hemp laws that are on the books. Again, they're all different. I think Kentucky's probably has the best set of regulations in the country for, you know, agricultural industrial hemp. And
what do you
mean
by best? Does that mean they don't mess with it? Or like, what's the best regulation look like?
Their best regulation is their ability to sue the DEA. From the Attorney General to the Department of Agriculture, you name it, they went after the DEA and said, listen, this is the law, the way we interpret it. You're messing with our industry. You're stopping jobs from getting created. You're stopping research from happening. And they actually sued the DEA in federal court last year because the DEA tried seizing all the hemp seeds that were destined for legal industrial hemp research according to federal law.
Wow.
So it's quite interesting. And then there was another bill passed in the budget, I don't know, a couple of months ago. Some people didn't realize it, but it defunded the DEA from seizing hemp seeds. It defunded the DEA from going after sick medical marijuana patients and anyone that was following the law. So really, you know, they had to go after the DEA in different creative ways because, you know, they don't believe in states' rights or states' laws. And there's a lot of confusion there at the federal level. So
yeah,
there really needs to...
Yeah, tell me this too. There's a lot about the levels of THC in various medical marijuana supplies, isn't there? So are they GMO? Is that it? Are they being grafted and changed in terms of the plants that are growing?
No, not at all. It's hybriding. It's just crossbreeding different plants.
Okay.
And, you know, just like you would do with a flower or any other kind of plant, it's just crossbreeding. And the issue that I think that legalization brings up is regulation. And we need a regulated cannabis industry, you know, mm-hmm. because if you're sick and you're going in to get your medicine, you know, you want to know how many milligrams of THC you're taking. Imagine someone giving you a Valium and not knowing if it's 5 milligrams or 100 milligrams.
Yeah,
you know, that's a huge difference, you know. So this
you're either
forces,
flat on the floor or you're feeling better.
Yeah. So these laws and regulation brings everything into compliance. So these stores and these distributors who are selling the product, they have to test it. They have to do certificates of analysis. You know, I mean, how many cannabinoids are in there, the milligrams, are there heavy metals, are there pesticides, how was it grown? You know, so I think this really, you know, makes the industry transparent, because if it's medicine, we want to know how it was grown and who made it and how many milligrams of the THC is in there, or CBD.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm from Washington State, but I'm living in California, but I think Washington's got a lot of action going on. Is there any state that you consider is a good example on how it should all be handled, that it's recognized in such a way as to build the business? Or is
recreational marijuana or medical?
Medical. Well, recreational, I suppose, but I'm just thinking more of the medical, reliable stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know the federal government, the Attorney General, Department of Justice came out and they gave some points called the 8 points of legalization. And, you know, they didn't really, you know, they just kind of outlined the Washington laws. It's called Regulate Like Alcohol. And they kind of like it that way because in the alcohol industry, you know, the manufacturer, like, say, Budweiser, they just make the beer. They can't own the distributorship, and they can't own the retail store.
Oh.
So in Washington, so you have three different parts of the industry. You have your manufacturers, your wholesalers, and your retailers. A manufacturer can't own a retailer, and a distributor or a wholesaler can't own the retailer. So, and then they're each taxed 25%. That's a 75% tax increase.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
And so that's to keep people from monopolies? Is that what that's for?
That's correct. Yeah, that is correct. Now, in Colorado, it's a state constitutional thing that it's run in a different manner. It's run like a regular business, and it's taxed and all that. But it's not regulated like alcohol, and it's a little looser, and I think it's more conducive for business. You know, it's only the first year, it's going to the second year, so, you know, we're going to see what happens. But according to some of the statistics out there, they've created, you know, $80 million in tax revenue, I believe, and $15 million of that in Colorado went to the school district. So that's pretty good.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So what about California? Is it kind of up there? Is it good?
Well, okay, let's go back to California. Oops. California's nonprofit.
Okay.
So it was set up when we legalized in 1996. It was set up as a nonprofit and as a collective system, where in Washington State and Colorado, it's for-profit.
Okay.
And so when you have the nonprofit and the collective issue, it's really hard for compliance. It's hard to really run it as a corporation or a business, and so you can see a lot of people can have had issues with their taxes and with, you know, how do I run this as a nonprofit collective? And
how do they stabilize or regulate the quality or the content, really, of their medical marijuana, for example, if they're in a collective, you know?
Yeah, well, the collective, it's up to them. You know, I think it's, I'd say, self-policing the industry to where, you know, you're seeing more and more of people testing their cannabis medicine, you know, going to laboratories and getting a certificate of analysis saying, you know, this is how much percentage of THC, CBD is in this product, and it's starting to be labeled, you know, packaging, you know, issues like that, you know, where, you know, in Colorado it's a lot stricter because it's business orientated. In like, again, California, where, you know, packaging is a big issue. You know, you have people that are putting cartoons on the front of a chocolate bar, you know, and selling it as, you know, Kush bars or something. And I don't think it's safe for children when you start doing that, because it's confusing. And we really have to look at this in a serious way, and packaging, labeling, all that stuff. Just like if you went to a vitamin store, you know, and you got your herbs and your vitamins, you know, it just makes it safer for the consumer.
Well, we recently had a vitamin fellow on the air, and he was talking about the danger in the way some of them are loosely regulated or not carefully done, and you just don't know what you're getting. Yeah. So that's the same
And
problem.
that's loosely, no, it's loosely done, and he, again, yeah, he's correct. But well, in the cannabis industry, there's nothing, so you can do whatever you want here in California in terms of packaging and selling it, and you know, it definitely needs to be, I think, looked at a little closer, and also change the model. The business model should be more conducive for business, and that way, you know, it can create more jobs, I think, and more investment. And the banks can get involved and all that.
Well, here's a question I have for you, Chris, because I called around a few people before I talked to you who are involved in the industry. And one of the questions is what are the big problems is it's a cottage industry, it's a natural thing, it's a kind of an agrarian thing, and the fear is what if it gets scooped up by pharmaceuticals? And it sounds like with the business model, that could happen really easily. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. We do know that the pharmaceutical companies are going to, you know, turn the chemicals into a synthetic, which we know doesn't work as good. And you know, if somebody wants to do that, they can go ahead. But with the end of the day, we know which works better. And you know, a matter of fact, the United States government owns the patent. They filed a patent claim on cannabidiol CBD in 2004. They you know, the government's involved in this, the federal government, you know, even though they say it has no value for medical or human use whatsoever, they own the patent on THC and CBD. So, you know, you're going to see other, I think, nutraceutical companies coming into this space. So you're going to have your home growers and your home brewers, and then you can have a regulated business space, like I said, where people can, you know, make sure that their product is safe, because a lot of this medicine could be grown outdoors, and people are like, oh yeah, it's better to grow outdoors. But if you're out in the woods, you have animals and birds, and you have all kinds of contaminants that can get on that medicine,
Or
especially if
toxic
you're.
areas, just toxic, chemically toxic areas as well.
Yeah, so you have to be careful, and you know, there's definitely a lot has to be looked at and research done, and as this is moving forward, especially in California.
Well, okay, so let's jump back to the federal, because what I was trying to bring up was the fact that there's such variation amongst states. So how does the appeal to the federal government to regulate, how does that cover or blanket a bigger picture?
Yeah, currently right now they don't want to regulate. They're basically, it's a states' rights issue, so it's up to the state to regulate the industry.
Okay.
The only thing the federal government can do is recognize it as safe for humans and have a medical use. But currently, like right now, you know, that's where the confusion lies, that marijuana, hemp, medical marijuana, industrial hemp, whatever you want to call it, it's all, like I said, in Schedule One with acid, ecstasy, and heroin, and it really, you know, scares researchers and people from getting involved at that level.
Right. Yeah, not a surprise. So what if they say that it's up to the states, then all we're looking for is just from Schedule One to Schedule Two, and that's all, eh?
Yeah, with well, that's what the Cures Act, the Industrial Hemp Act. I believe that's put forth by Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul and quite a few other politicians that have signed up for it. I believe it removes it out of all the schedules and puts agricultural hemp, industrial hemp, under the USDA control, which it should be because it's a agricultural product. It's not a drug. It's for agriculture, and it's an herb, and it's natural, and it shouldn't be regulated like a drug, because farmers need to grow it. They're not, you know, and so that's another issue that needs to be looked at and voted
If I
on.
understand you correctly, Mitch McConnell is pro doing that.
Yeah, Kentucky, basically they look at it this way in Kentucky, that I think one of the politicians there said this is going to create 10 times more jobs in the XL pipeline, you know, and
Oh,
when
good.
they,
Okay.
oh yeah, this is a job creator. You know, investment, people building factories, building mills. And it's in the history of this country that this crop, you know, was so vital to our economy, to the success of, you know, America, that I think they're overlooking, you know, all the other drug aspects and saying, you know, the whole world grows hemp. The Canadians, the Europeans, the Chinese, the Australians. Why can't we grow it? The whole world grows it. Let's start, you know, here in investing in them in building the factories here. So it's an economic issue, and also it, I think, is an emotional issue with a lot of people.
Yeah, it is actually. It's sort of you're making me aware that I'm ignorant about why it's so, such a hot button. You know, quite ignorant about it. What is cannabis?
Well, you know, I mean, when you're doing it every day, it's just okay. You know, it's like you live and breathe it. But I think the more this information gets out, and just, you know, by you letting me have the opportunity to be on your show and mention some of this stuff, and I know I'm glossing over it pretty quick, but it just gets, it opens people's eyes to, like, the potential, you know, job factor, economic factor, environmental factor. We didn't even talk about the carbon sequestration of hemp, you know. I mean, you know.
And tell us about that. We're not done yet, so you've got time.
Well, currently, we know that an acre of hemp can sequester over 2,500 pounds of carbon per acre. And so if we can use those products in clothing and construction materials, building homes, I mean, we can sequester quite a bit of carbon, you know. And, you know, you grow 100 acres, that's 25,000 pounds of carbon sequestering, you know. Now, if you compare it to cotton, I think, puts out, farming cotton puts out, about maybe 1,000 pounds of carbon per acre, where hemp is opposite. It's sequestering 2,500 pounds. So it's
and
quite
sequestering
unique.
Sequestering means pulling it in from the atmosphere, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's kind of an amazing tool there, too. Where can it grow? Which parts of the country?
It grows very well in Kentucky, of course. That's where they grew it in World War II, and it was the number one producer of hemp, probably United States, for over 100 years. It grows great in California. I think any of the Sun Belt states, you know, as long as it likes water. But it can be grown with very little pesticides and herbicides if it's grown correctly. Now, when you grow it on the agricultural end of things, where you're planting, you know, seeds every 2 inches apart, and you kind of grow it like bamboo, there's no branches. Mm-hmm. When you grow hemp packed in tight, real close together, it won't shoot off any branches. It just goes straight up.
Is it usable, or is it, you know?
Yes, that's the most valuable fiber, is a hemp plant with no branches.
Oh, wow.
Because the fiber is
really
nice and long and clean. Once you get a branch, it kind of puts a notch in the long fiber.
So you're talking about the kind of hemp that would make the best clothing, for example, cotton or fabric.
Yeah, I think in the industry, depending on what type of product you're using it for, a long fiber, you know, you definitely want to grow it shorter. I mean, you want to grow it together without any branches, and it's easier to harvest that way, and it definitely is more productive in that sense.
So that's really interesting. These are things I did not know anything about, so I'm very excited that you're on the air with us. Can you take a minute and talk about some of the medicinal results that you've heard about, or is that outside of your realm?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I'm not a doctor, and we make products, so it's hard to make claims, but, you know, of course, the FDA making claims is, as a matter of fact, the FDA sent out letters to about, I think, 8 or 9 different CBD, cannabidiol, hemp companies for making claims. As you know, in the dietary supplement industry, just like in the hemp cannabis industry, you can't really make claims of a product, you know, cures cancer or cures pain and all that. That's always been a no-no. But what I do is I refer people to PubMed.gov.
Okay.
And PubMed.gov is the government website, and you just look up CBD or THC or marijuana, and there's like over 1,000 studies out there, you know. Matter of fact, I can tell you that the National Health Institute of Science, Health and Human Services, federal government, Now, I told you earlier that they own the patent to CBD cannabidiol, which is a cannabinoid that's in hemp and marijuana. They own the patent to it for a neuroprotectant. And a neuroprotectant would be basically used for somebody who's got a brain injury,
mm-hmm.
somebody with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing, and it's really interesting to see the government actually specifically honing in on cannabidiol as a neuroprotectant.
This reminds me of our talk about aliens. They use the information but deny they exist.
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect. I'll have to use that.
But so keep talking. That's really, really interesting because I don't know how a government could patent something as natural as the vital force in cannabis, for example.
Yeah, I don't either. It's called the 507 patent, and you can actually look it up, and it just describes and explains what it's used for. And they also have some studies going on as a prophylactic cellular encapsulation, again, just protecting live cells, specifically for the liver. Hmm. And they've done studies with people that were alcoholics that have destroyed their liver with alcohol. They can use CBD cannabidiol, and some of these studies shows that it actually protects the liver.
Wow.
So somebody goes out
really
drinking, maybe they want to use some CBD. Well, I'm just saying that jokingly, but in all seriousness, there is quite a bit of research going down in that part of the field in that study.
Wow. I just want to go back to this patent thing. Can you patent anything? I mean, patent to me means it's replicatable and your style of replicating it is your own style. But you can't do that with nature, right?
I think they were trying to replicate it or patent it for that specific use.
Okay.
I'm not a patent attorney, but it's you know, I highly recommend people go online and look up CBD cannabidiol patent 507, and they'll be shocked to find it in the government archives. And it was only 2004 that they pulled the patent on it. So, but at the same time, it's in Schedule 1, and it says it doesn't have any practical use for medical use on humans whatsoever. So,
how ironic. Is that ironic?
It is.
Is that just typical of what happens?
Yeah, it's just typical, I think. We're starting to realize that.
But I also think that thing about protecting, what did you call it, neurological?
Prophylactic encapsulation.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty exciting. So that must have stemmed from a long way back. So that knowledge was already occurrent or was really strong in their awareness, right?
Yeah, I think they saw some of the studies that were coming out using animals and using petri dishes and, you know, studying there. And they said, wow, this is looking really good in animals and in lab studies. Why don't we patent this for humans, you know? And I'm not sure how they're going to work it, and I'm not involved in that. But
in the olden days, I mean, when's the olden days? But 100 years back, you said they were already using this stuff as medicine anyway, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. It was, number one prescribed medicine here in America all in the 1800s. And, they were prescribing all kinds of stuff, cocaine, morphine, but cannabis was used for centuries and centuries. We do know that.
Yeah, and probably had specific use. So how can we be helpful? Let's go back. I know it's not your realm to be talking about the medicinal qualities, but I know we're all pretty fascinated by that. But how can we help with the changing of the laws and so on? How can we help?
You know, I'd say pick up the phone, call your local representative, and tell them to vote on the CARES Act. That one phone call is equal to, like, you know, I think 100 letters or something like that. I don't know. They equate it to, they tally it up, and, you know, you're in a district, and say you're a representative, and you have 100,000 people in your district, and 1,000 people call that senator or that congressperson, you know, they have to make a move on that, you know, because those are their constituents. And it's turned down to a vote thing. Even Mitch McConnell, you know, he's very, very conservative, but he realized, he started going to his political rallies when he was running for office last year or the year before. And, you know, the first 5 questions was, are we going to legalize hemp? And he says, okay, well, you know, if I put my finger on the hot button, this is like one of the most asked questions I get at my rallies. And sure enough, from what I heard, you know, he would go to a rally and he would say, "Watch this. The first question is going to be about hemp," and it sure was.
Wow.
I learned from some of the best teachers in the world. You know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. Like, I always mention Jack Herra. He's the famous author who wrote the book, "The Emperor Wears No Clothes." And he's the guy I met in 1990 in Van Nuys in the store. He was getting people to sign up to legalize hemp, and plus he was selling his book, "The Emperor Wears No Clothes," which I call the Hemp Bible. And you open this book up, and it has everything in there, from the Popular Mechanics articles to the War of 1812 to all the way to Harry Aslinger, his hatred for jazz and blacks. You know, I mean, this book is all historical, you know, copies of newspaper articles and government documents that you say, okay, well, this is for real. This is, you know, something that you don't find in your history books. And
so a person should order that book, I think, eh? The Emperor Has No Clothes? Is that what it's called?
The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Harris. It's the Hemp and Marijuana Conspiracy.
Hmm. So then to influence, you already said it. You said phone your representative, right?
And I think that is, you know, that's what I learned early on, you know, is you really need to, you know, we can talk all we want amongst our friends, but sending that email, sending that letter with a stamp on it, or picking up the phone and calling your local representative and saying, you know, "I'm calling because I would like my representative to vote on the CARES Act," or "I want my representative to vote on the industrial hemp legislation," or sign on to the bill rather than vote, sign on to this legislation. And they write that stuff down. They take it serious. And we probably don't do that enough.
I don't think I do. CARES Act, when is that? When is that vote?
I guess they're actually trying to get more politicians to endorse it. So I think they've got about 10 or 12 politicians endorsing it, and they need maybe 20 or 30, I'm not sure, but with the political climate going on right now, who knows when. Hopefully this spring they're going to move it forward.
Wow. I think it's a very, very exciting time, especially given what you explained to us about why they keep it the way it, why they legislate it the way it has been. It's a very evolutionary thing, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's becoming such, I'd say, headline news almost every day, whether it's medical marijuana, whether it's recreational marijuana or hemp. I mean, it's across the board. And we're even seeing law enforcement come out, you know. And I just read a great report out of Colorado. Crime rate has gone down in some areas. Drunk driving deaths have gone down in the state. Is it because of legalization? We don't know yet, but we're seeing a slow trend and a downward trend in, you know, certain criminal acts in these states.
Wow, I mean, that's really encouraging. What's the organization that you work in and represent? What is it called here? I've scrolled and I've lost my spot, but it's Canavest.
Canavest, yeah, Canavest Corporation. And we're a publicly traded company. Mm-hmm. We basically invest and operate in the agricultural hemp industry. So currently we grow 3,000 acres of industrial hemp, like to call it agricultural hemp. Mm-hmm. We grow it in Europe.
Why in Europe?
Because it's against the law, really, to grow industrial hemp in the United States, except for this year. We grew an experimental crop last year at Murray State University in Kentucky. And then this year, we'll probably grow a couple hundred acres in Kentucky for research purposes. And eventually, we're going to move our European operation here into the United States and build factories and build seed crushing mills and CBD processing centers. And that way the farmers, we can contract out to farmers to grow the hemp, and then they have a place that they can sell it to. And
that's kind of a thriving future there.
Oh, it's going to be huge. I mean, companies like ours, Canavest, and then there's other companies out there that are jumping into the same space, and they're going to build factories, and they're going to build processing centers just like we are. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need it to be removed from Schedule One, so the banks can loan money, and you know, investment bankers could come in. And a matter of fact, who was it? The guy who originally invested into PayPal, mm-hmm. he was the original investor into Facebook, Peter Thiel.
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge investor out of San Francisco. He just put up $50 million to a company in
Woo.
Up in Seattle.
Woo.
And
about cannabis, you mean about this, about industrial marijuana? Or?
Yeah, so we're really focused on the agricultural, industrial hemp end of it because we focus on the CBD, the cannabidiol,
mm-hmm.
which is prevalent in industrial hemp. It's basically most of your marijuana growers bred the CBD out of marijuana for the last 40 years because the CBD interacts with the THC and it can bring your high down. So for years, people just wanted to get high. It wasn't really a medical thing. And they kind of hybrided the CBD out of marijuana. And it was the exact opposite with the industrial hemp.
Oh,
breeders.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, like in France and in Ukraine, all over Europe, they bred the THC out of the industrial hemp and increased the CBD. And now we realize that the CBD cannabidiol might have more medical benefits than the THC in some areas.
Wow, isn't that interesting? I wanted to ask you, what's going on in all over Europe, for example? Are they much more open about this hemp growing and the marijuana using?
The hemp growing, yes, they've been growing hemp in Europe. You know, some of them haven't stopped for the last 500 years. You know, you go to the Czech Republic, you go to Austria, you go to Germany, Romania, Hungary, Poland. They all grow hemp. England's growing hemp. Spain, France. Yeah, their industry's has been around for quite some time. Marijuana, they're a little more stricter on. They definitely have all signed on to the UN, I think the 1960s UN Treaty and Convention on Narcotics. So that has to be changed also. But yeah, marijuana is pretty strict in European cities compared to here in the United States, except for Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's famous for that. So, but you're saying it's under the Narcotics Act, and maybe you're saying that it shouldn't quite be.
Yeah, the Treaty on Narcotics, I think, there's actually a name for that treaty, and it puts major restrictions on countries that grow or process cannabis for medicine. And the people have been up in arms here about the United States because, you know, we're basically technically in violation of the UN Treaty on Narcotics because we've legalized cannabis here in this country, so there's been talk about also.
But isn't America kind of famous for going against what the UN has decided?
There you go, exactly.
We have to close this for now, but you've got me thinking. I'm just all wound up now. So I guess the thing is to get hold of representatives and ask that they shift, that they vote to, what is it? You tell us how to phrase it.
Yeah, there's two bills that I'm really excited about. Is the
just call, you know, would be your local senator. And it's the CARES Act.
CARRERS?
Yes, that's correct, the CARES Act. And what that will do is that will remove it from Schedule 1, like we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Cory Booker, Senator Booker, and Gillibrand are presenting the bill. So ask your local senator, your state senator for the government, is to sign on to that bill. And the other bill is the Industrial Hemp Act, which is sponsored by Senator Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul.
Okay. Wow, this is very exciting. And thank you, Chris Boucher. You've actually given us something to do to make a difference, to kind of lift a lid off things, hey?
Well, I'm so glad you had me on here. And I don't know if I can give out my toll-free number, but we're
you
giving away $50 worth of free CBD.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. If anyone calls, just say they listen to your show, and we'll send you or anyone $50 worth of our products. It's 855-758-7223. Or you can go to canavest.com and you can purchase and buy them. But if you want them for free, call that 855-758-7223 and we'll pay for shipping and we'll give you $50 worth of free hemp cannabidiol CBD.
Wow, what a treat that is. Oh, I thank you very much for that. And if they have any questions, I guess they can just email you about what you're talking about, eh?
Yeah, I will answer any question that's emailed to me. I'd be more than happy to.
All right. Well, thank you. So, do I have your email address?
It's chris.boucher@canavest.com.
Well, Chris, this has really been quite a stimulating and activating discussion that we've had with you. And thank you for your great work in the world.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate the opportunity to let me come on and talk hemp. That's what I do.
I really appreciate your work. Thank you so much.
You have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.